support for OPB comes from our members and from our sponsors, like Mike Rosenberg from Columbia Credit Union. Mike says they trust what they see and hear on OPB, and that aligns with Columbia Credit Union's brand.
It's OPB Politics Now for Friday, December 22nd. If you pay taxes in the state of Oregon, you probably know about the kicker. And you're not alone if you've noticed that kickers are happening more and more, and in higher amounts. Next year, a staggering $5.6 billion will be sent back to taxpayers. Why is that, and how did we get here? Today, we're going in-depth on Oregon's kicker tax law. Welcome to the podcast. I'm OPB business reporter Kyra Buckley.
And I'm OPB politics reporter Dirk Vanderhart.
Dirk, first off, what is the kicker?
Yes, the kicker is a tax refund built into the state constitution with an eye toward restraining government spending here in Oregon. And it's really based on the fact that Oregon lawmakers set state budgets every 2 years by using a forecast from the state economist that predicts how much revenue the state can expect over those 2 years. What the kicker law says is that anytime personal income tax and some other revenue streams come in 2% or more higher than the number lawmakers built their budget around, all the overage heads back to taxpayers. This really is a pretty unique Oregon thing. There are a handful of states that do return revenues to taxpayers when they hit a certain threshold, but none that I've found do so with the frequency of Oregon's kicker.
And it's possible people have become more aware of this kicker law in recent years because they've been, you know, getting money back.
Yeah.
So the kicker law, though, it's been around for a while. Can you just remind us of the origin story?
Yeah, and in fact, I would say, let's go back a bit beyond just recent years. I mean, since the kicker was created, it's been triggered more often than it has not. And we are in a kicker hot streak right now, as you are alluding to, Kyra. The refund has kicked in every two-year budget for the last decade. And actually, over that decade, as you said, kicker refunds have grown larger and larger. But to the history, this law has its origins more than four decades ago in the late 70s. This was a time when inflation had sort of gripped the country. People were seeing, for instance, their property taxes shoot up or their income taxes balloon. And so in many states, there was a bit of a tax revolt happening. I mean, most notably in California, just to the south, voters approved a sort of severe property tax limitation. And Oregon officials got nervous. They were hoping to get ahead of something like that here. So they passed what they called a tax relief package. This was in 1979. And actually, for the talk of the kicker we hear today, actually the biggest pieces of that package in 79 were cuts to Oregon's property taxes and income taxes. I mean, real tax relief. Those were the big ticket items. Alongside of those came this tool designed to ensure that when the state gets a chunk of money they weren't expecting and hadn't budgeted for, it would go back to taxpayers, but kind of wasn't talked about a ton at the time. And one more thing I just think we should note here is that, you know, initially there were actually two kickers, one that refunded personal income taxes that came in over expectations and one that refunded business taxes that came in over expectations. But in 2012, Oregon voters changed that corporate kicker, as it was known. So it now goes toward public schools, not back to taxpayers. So to be clear, when we are talking the kicker today, even though there's technically a corporate kicker that goes to schools, we are talking about the personal income tax kicker.
Yeah, that's important to note. And as you just said, this law has been around since the late 70s, but now we have $5.6 billion heading back to Oregonians. And Dirk, as you noted, that's the most ever, and by a lot. We talked about this before. It's because of the mismatch between the forecasted revenue and the actual revenue. So how did this emerge? When did it become clear that this would be such an enormous kicker?
Yeah, and for people that follow revenue forecasts, this has been kind of a wild ride to track. But you know, as you're saying, we've seen these escalating kicker payments over the last decade as economists underguessed how much income tax money the state would collect by just bigger and bigger amounts. This really took off during the pandemic. I mean, as you'll remember, Kyra, when COVID-19 hit, a lot of people lost their jobs, businesses were closed, this major economic downturn was in the works. And those are all things that led many economists, not just here in Oregon, but all around the country, to predict sort of major blow to revenues. That didn't actually happen in Oregon, though, over the course of the two-year budget. It happened in the short term, but not over the 2 years that our budget's comprised. Because what also happened during the recession is the federal government sent a huge amount of money to state coffers. And rich people who in Oregon pay a greater share of income tax actually weren't doing that bad. In fact, they were doing pretty well. So income taxes here smashed the low expectations that we had set, and kickers began escalating. In 2022, actually, the state saw a record kicker. For the first time, it was a refund of about $1.9 billion, which at the time was seen as shocking. Obviously, it got a little worse or a little grander. So the state's economist's name is Mark McMullen. He consults economic modeling. He talks to a lot of experts to create these predictions. But it's ultimately up to him what the revenue forecast says. And last year, he was determined not to let that mistake happen again. He didn't want a record. So he said, I'm going to stick my neck out. I'm going to do this really bullish revenue forecast. It might mean that we're expecting too much money and have to cut budgets, but we just want to avoid a kicker. And it just turned out he couldn't have been more wrong. All these things conspired. People were worried about federal tax rates rising, so they started realizing capital gains taxes. It gets very, very nerdy, but suffice it to say, McMullen was off by a lot, by $5.6 billion. And he is pretty frank about this when you ask him what happened. Here's part of what he told me when we were talking about this.
If we'd have projected that we would smash all records in terms of liability growth over the next biennium when recessionary calls were jumping out of the woodwork at the time, we would have been laughed out of the room.
So he's adamant. You know, he was sort of putting his finger in the wind and nothing like this was out there. And there are a lot of people who agree that it would have been pretty impossible to have seen the massive waves of taxes that we saw under those circumstances. But again, he was off because his educated guess was wrong. We are now $5.6 billion lighter in the state's general fund.
Wow. All right. You wrote about this recently, and it had your story had an eye toward how Oregon compares to other states when it comes to predicting future tax revenues. So, Dirk, can you just tell me a little bit more about what you found out?
Sure. So every state uses these revenue forecasts to help them set their budget. And because of that, it's possible to look at those forecasts, you know, how much money a state was expecting, how much money came in, and then kind of compare them for accuracy. I think there are some challenges to that. And we can talk about it, but if you are just going by the raw numbers, Oregon is among the worst states at predicting revenues. We are not the worst, but we are definitely in the lower tier, particularly if you look at the last three budget cycles or so.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that more. So is Oregon just like, are we worse at these revenue forecasts because we're really bad at economic modeling? What's accounting for the state trailing most others when it comes to accuracy?
And that is the big question. That was my question. And it's a question that can get you some very different answers. I mean, there are some folks who look at this pattern, right, over the last 10 years, but maybe even longer, and see what amounts to a dereliction of duty. I spoke with people at public employee unions in the state. They represent thousands of employees who obviously rely on the state having a healthy budget because that's where they get their paychecks. And they sort of suspect that McMullen and his team are underguessing on purpose because it's easier to underguess and maybe hit a kicker than overguess, have, you know, the state budget for some crazy amount of money that's not coming. And then we're talking about, you know, tax increases or budget cuts or very politically tricky and tough things. McMullen will say, and in fact, other people have held this, his job will say, you know, that's definitely not the case. They are not purposefully underguessing. And, you know, there are some things that pretty much everyone acknowledges makes Oregon's tax revenue pretty hard to predict. One is the fact that we have two-year budgeting, as I've said. That's unlike most states that budget for a single year. Obviously, forecasting revenues for 2 years is trickier than 1 year. McMullen would say it's exponentially trickier than 1 year, not just double the trickiness. The other big thing is that Oregon is extremely reliant on income taxes. Voters here have repeatedly said no to sales taxes, which are considered relatively stable. And as a result, the state's general fund is more reliant than any other state in the nation on income taxes, which tend to swing sort of wildly depending on economic circumstances. That makes it super tricky to predict how things are going to go. I spoke with Mark Hass about this. He is a former Democratic state senator from Beaverton, who for years was the chair of the Senate Revenue Committee. And here's a bit of what he said.
We've got a tax code that brings in too much in the good times and not enough in the bad times. That's really the inherent problem here. And
yeah.
So the kicker is symptomatic of that problem.
And I think the other thing to note here is that experts I talked with all pointed out that the margin for error in the kicker is very, very low. Trying to get revenue right within 2% is something pretty much no state can do with regularity, especially with some of the recent impacts of COVID and high inflation. But obviously, in this case, we are not talking about an error of 2.2% or 3%. I mean, it is, when you're getting to a $5.6 billion refund, a lot higher than that.
All right. So the eye-popping amount this time around, it's drawing some criticism, but the kicker has been controversial in some corners for a long time. It's also gone through some changes. Can you talk a little bit about what changed in the year 2000 that made the kicker even more resilient?
Yeah, so Democrats these days, people will know, sort of run the government here, both chambers of the legislature, they have the governor's office. And many of them dislike the fact that the state is giving back billions of dollars when we have, for instance, underfunded schools, right? But they can't do anything about it. And that's because of some foresight by Republicans. In the late 90s, when they still controlled both chambers of the legislature, GOP lawmakers decided to ask voters to insert the kicker into the state's constitution. One of those lawmakers was actually Tim Knope, who these days is the Senate minority leader. He's from Bend. But back in 1999, he was a House freshman who was sort of leading this push to get the kicker in the Constitution. Here's what he said.
I saw the issue back then as the kicker going away if and when the Democrats ever took control. And I knew the pendulum would at some point swing back to Democrats. Just, you know, you just really don't know when that'll occur.
And the strategy here is this, right? If the kicker is just written into state statute, it is subject to the whims of legislators. They can change state statute with a bill anytime they want. But if it's written into the state constitution, it can only be altered by voters. And as we know, Knope was right. Democrats did win back control. Today, they are dominant in the state. But voters agreed in 2000 to put the kicker into the Constitution, and so voters can only take it out. And polling suggests they are not likely to do that, since they like sort of getting a tax cut every couple of years. The other thing on this is lawmakers do still have power over the kicker in some sense. They can suspend all or part of it on a case-by-case basis. But under the Constitution, a supermajority of two-thirds of lawmakers in each chamber needs to approve that. And Republicans like Knope have said they won't provide votes for that to happen. So once again, Democrats have been stymied.
So it sounds like the history of the kicker, some of it's been a little bit of a partisan battle.
Right.
Let's talk about today. Let's get into some of the drama. Right now, who likes the kicker? Who doesn't like the kicker?
Well, that partisan split is actually still pretty big today. I mean, Republicans tend to love it. It restrains how much the government can grow. It amounts to a tax cut, you know, things that they really appreciate. Democrats and their allies, remember I talked about public employee unions, they will often point out that there are just a lot of things the state could and in their mind should do with this funding that, you know, the state is not overtaxing people. This is the tax code. It's realizing the money that tax code dictates should come in. It's not ill-gotten gains, but because of this guess by a state economist, it has to go back. And a lot of them will argue that's a shame, especially as we face a number of mounting crises. One lawmaker who often talks about the opportunities that he thinks are being squandered by the kicker is Senator Lou Frederick. He's a Portland Democrat who helps write the school's budget in the legislature. Here's sort of how he put it to me.
If we took a billion and a half of that kicker, we would reach the quality education model. If we took some of that money, we could be dealing with roads, we could be dealing with healthcare, we could be dealing with higher education. It's there. It's not available because of the way that we've designed the kicker, and it's not available because people have been told that that somehow that it's taking money from folks. It's not.
You know, Frederick has a lot of folks that I think agree with him in the Democratic caucus, but he definitely doesn't speak for every Democrat. Notably, Governor Tina Kotek has avoided calling for clawing back part of this $5.6 billion kicker. She has insisted when she's asked that Oregonians are looking forward to the tax relief they are about to get, we are about to get next year. And she sort of says any discussion on changing the kicker is a long-term discussion. It's not something where she's going to start trying to come at the refund going out next year.
This is something I've heard in recent months, people talking about putting that money towards other things like education. That's kind of a big one. But it seems like folks that maybe want to change this law, they're going to find it pretty challenging. What are the chances it's going to be amended anytime soon?
So that is a pretty interesting question right now. There is sort of a conventional wisdom in Oregon that the kicker is untouchable. As I said, polling shows that it's overwhelmingly popular. It's in the Constitution. So if voters like it, it's probably not going anywhere. Even the folks who most want to do away with the kicker don't see launching a campaign as worth their time. But that might not be the end of the conversation. In recent years, there has been a new theory kicked around that maybe the kicker can be altered a bit without the approval of voters rather than being appealed. Currently, there is a group, it's a think tank in Portland called North Star Civic Foundation, that has been floating this year a proposal that would wall off at least some of the taxes that figure into the kicker. In this case, capital gains taxes that people pay when they do things like sell stocks or homes. These are an income stream that tend to swing heavily. They can come in huge amounts depending on the economic situation of a year and then completely dry up. And that can really create these boom-bust cycles in the state's revenue. So what North Star is proposing is walling some of those taxes in a separate fund. They wouldn't be refunded for future kickers, but would be kept for one-time expenses or satisfying some state needs. But there's just a huge legal question behind that, which is whether such a change would need to be approved by voters. If the answer to that question is yes, and we don't have a definitive answer right now, the idea is probably sunk. But we do know what's being talked about, and I asked Demay, we will hear more about it in at least the coming year or so.
All right. So for now, the kicker stands. And by the way, if you're listening and wondering what your kicker amount will be, the state has a calculator you can use. It's on the Oregon Department of Revenue website. Let's leave it there for today. Thanks for joining me, Dirk.
Thanks, Kyra.
This week's episode was produced by Andrew Thien, and our audio engineer is Deline Silva. Our music comes from Audio Network. We won't be back next week as our reporters recharge at the end of what's been another busy year. We'll be back the first week of January with more conversations and analysis about the political issues you care about. Until then, you can find all of OPB's reporting at opb.org. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.
I'm Alex Zielinski, City Government Reporter at OPB. We know you love hearing about the latest political battles on this podcast. OPB's Salmon Wars podcast will give you insights into some of the history behind what's happening now. It tells the story of one Yakima Nation family who has been fighting for salmon in the Columbia River across generations. Find Salmon Wars wherever you listen to podcasts.